One, two, three, clap. One, two, three, clap.
Oh God, even the clap was sticky.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 74 of Left of Skeptic. My name is Brittany Lind.
And I am the sticky, sweaty, sore remnant of the other host, Kayla Moria.
We are a very warm paranormal podcast.
Yes, we are.
So, at this time last week, it was so cold.
47 degrees.
Yeah, it was cold enough so that if you were anywhere near the lake, you could see your own breath.
And now, mine wasn't that bad, but it was still pretty, like, it was, we had the heat on.
Yeah, it was cold. It was cold, y'all. And now, a week later, it's so hot. It's so, and upstairs is so hot. I don't like it.
When you have a podcasting room, you add acoustic treatments to try to cut down on the echo and the background noise.
Mm-hmm.
We do. I mean, it's not soundproofing because it's very DIY and we're just getting through. But it holds in that heat. It's insulated.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, my room is sort of upstairs and in like a little bit of a corner, which is great for the sound. Like, I very rarely hear a lot of the little kids in my neighborhood screaming, even with the window open. It's usually pretty okay. But my golly, is there zero breeze. Michaela, you are losing your voice. How are you?
I am great. I'm going to push through and try to sound normal as much as possible. Okay. I also had to talk all day at work today.
Oh.
That's not why my voice is sore, though. My voice is sore because I went to Wrestlepalooza last night.
Fuck yeah, I forgot. I was wondering when that was happening.
I spent 4 hours screaming for my favorite wrestlers. And
oh,
you know what? It's
God.
All worth it. Devin Monroe upheld his Uptown VFW title. We are good. I am happy. I see some very attractive people throw each other around, and it was a pride pre-party. So
awesome.
That was very fun. I got to spend the weekend with Lisa and Travis, who I always enjoy. So if you all hear me, you know, clear my throat a little bit, or if it sounds a little off, trust me when I tell you it's worth it. How are you doing?
I'm good. My voice is fine. I actually recently, and by recently I mean a couple hours ago, came back from the cabin. It was Steve's birthday yesterday, so we went up to the cabin. I had today off, so it was relaxing. It was honestly the most relaxed and unplugged I've been. Apparently Steve's cabin is magical, because this is essentially what Kayla said when she came back from it.
Yep.
But it's just the most unplugged that I've been in a very long time, and I could actually like feel it in my body. Just all the tension left. And it was so nice.
Happy
and
birthday,
now I'm here.
Steve.
Yeah. Happy birthday, babe. Babe. But yeah, now I'm here and I'm hot and I don't like it. But I am excited. Thank you. But I am excited to hear your story, because I'm also really excited to tell you the sort of like part two continuation of last week's story for me.
Awesome. Well, speaking of Lisa and Travis, who I got to hang out with this weekend, they both sent me the same TikTok a while ago, which that's not that abnormal. We send each other TikToks all the time. We also have like a group Snapchat where we talk daily, and in general, we just talk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What's weird is that after they sent me that TikTok, several other people sent it to me as well.
Was I one of them?
I don't know.
Okay. Because
you do like big binges. Whereas like
I do.
I tend to get a lot of TikToks on a daily.
Oh, yeah. Yum, yum.
But I knew I saw it a lot, and it's a super intriguing concept. Have you ever been told to stay away from staircases in the woods?
Yes. I think on TikTok.
So the link they sent me was from at ParapsychTalk, and it starts out, have you guys ever heard about the staircases in the woods? Apparently, deep in the woods, there are staircases that lead to nowhere, and you are absolutely supposed to stay away from them. 36% of the United States is covered in forest. That's over 800 million acres. I did not fact check that, by the way. I have no idea if that's actually how much woods there is in the United States.
You know, it sounds about right.
And there are elite search and rescue units that are deployed to search for people that inevitably go missing in these dense, wild, forested areas. And a ranger from one of those units authored a Reddit thread called, I am a search and rescue officer for the U.S. Forestry Service, and I have stories to tell. And he described these random staircases deep in the woods, miles and miles from any civilization that you are absolutely supposed to avoid.
Ooh.
So I tracked down the Reddit thread, and it was posted to No Sleep in four parts over 6 years ago. So this means two things. One, it is very possible that the stories aren't real.
Right.
In the No Sleep subreddit, which y'all have heard us talk about before, they have rule number two, that stories must be plausible. This means that the narrator must be physically and mentally capable of posting the events of the story, cannot be proven false on a large scale. And stories have to be written to be believable and have a reason to be believable. But there is no rule that the stories must be true. And they have rule number eight that says everything is true here, even if it's not. Users are to act as though everything is true on No Sleep and treat it as such in posts and comments. No debunking, disbelief, or criticism, constructive or otherwise. If the formatting is off, report the post and the mods will address it with the author. And it's just generally agreed upon that most of the No Sleep stories are works of fiction. You just can't say that in the subreddit. So when you're in that subreddit and posting and commenting, you are asked to suspend your disbelief and play along.
Okay.
The second thing this means is that I cannot go onto these and read them out loud on the podcast.
Right.
No Sleep has its own podcast, and it has very strong, like, well-enforced copyright rules.
Mm-hmm.
All stories submitted to No Sleep belong to the original poster, and if you don't ask for permission before narrating, producing, sharing their posts on another like website for any sort of monetary gain or anything, the original poster can file a Digital Millennium Copyright Act strike against you.
Ooh.
And that means they'll be able to have their content removed from your page. And if several people file DMCA strikes against you, there's a chance your site could be removed completely.
Wow.
Like shut down. So this is a U.S. copyright law, and I don't have permission to read the story, and I am not going to risk getting my ass chewed out and then having our podcast taken down. Not risking it.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. We've put a lot into this. 73 episodes to be exact.
So knowing that I couldn't read these stories, I went searching for other stories from other users and for any truth or evidence behind these stairs in the woods. I found an article in the Irish Mirror from August of 2021, and they discussed another TikToker, Jessie V. She has a large social media following, over 4 million people, with whom she shares strange and creepy facts and stories from all around the world. And one of her most popular videos is all focused upon random staircases in the woods and the unusual or possible theories behind them. And she explained, if you see a random staircase in the woods, you have to get away as fast as you can. Never climb them. There was a story going around for a couple of years stating that there are abandoned staircases in national forests around the world, like deep, deep in the forest, away from anybody. It's just a staircase. No other structure attached to it. Some stairs are in ruins. Some seem perfectly sturdy. Some have iron spirals, like the kind you'd find in a lighthouse. And they literally just reach up to nowhere. There are many different theories as to why these stairs are there and what actually happens when you climb them. Only a few have ever dared to climb the staircases, and the people who have report feeling unnerved and unwelcome or even nauseous when they're up the stairs. Some people say the stairs lead to another dimension. Other people say that they lead to hell. Some say that they lead to heaven.
Oh.
Kind of like in the...
the cemetery.
The Forest Lawn Cemetery?
Mm-hmm.
It's a cemetery I talked about a while ago.
Yep.
Others say that many people and kids go missing in national forests because they find these staircases and fuck around on them.
Oh. That... yeah.
So we have another TikToker from almost a year ago saying the same thing, but again, including nothing specific and listing no sources. So I kept digging.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I found a Signal Horizon article that answered my biggest burning question. Are these staircases real? And the answer is yes, they are real. They exist in at least 7 different countries, including the United States and Belgium, where... in Belgium, the highest peak in the country has a staircase that goes all the way to the top, but it's not attached to any structure.
What? Okay.
The various mysterious staircases that have been found are made from a variety of materials, including stone, brick, iron, and wood, and are all in various states of decay. They're different shapes, lengths, sizes, designs. The only thing that they really have in common is that they're stairs, and they're in the middle of the woods. And nobody knows why they're there.
Huh.
A lot of the famous sets of staircases have been named. One of the oldest of the staircases that are reported is from the Philippines, where you can find the Staircase of Missing Time.
Okay, if it wasn't creepy enough that you had a staircase that led to nowhere in the middle of the woods, calling it the Staircase of Missing Time, not helping your case.
The story goes, and the reason it has this name, is because a ranger, only named Torkic in the stories, in several of my sources, was somebody who was regularly hired to search for missing people in the local forests. He was an expert at that point, which was good, because those forests and jungles tend to be extremely dense and hard to navigate if you're not familiar with the surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on one of his patrols, Torkic said that he found 2 sets of stairs deep in the forest. He was intrigued, so he decided to climb them, and thinking he'd be able to get a better vantage point of the surrounding area to help in his search.
Smart, yep.
The first set of stairs was stone with decorative carvings, and the second set appeared to just be made of more natural stones, like somebody looked and found stuff in the woods and built a set of staircases.
Okay.
As he was examining them, he was looking for any signs of the missing people, which there were none. But at one point, he did see a stray dog appear kind of out of nowhere, and the dog was growling and seemed aggressive, so he rushed further up the stairs to put some distance between them, and he wanted to avoid any interactions with a feral dog, because, duh.
Yeah.
He climbed for a while longer, but was unsuccessful in finding anyone or any clues that would lead to the people he was looking for, so he decided, all right, time to turn back down the stairs and complete his patrol before going back to his station.
Mm-hmm.
When he returned to the station, he was met with some startling news. He was fired.
Why?
He was fired because he had not shown up for work in years.
Years?
From his perspective, he had only been gone on his patrol for like a couple hours.
Yeah.
But according to everyone else, Torkic had been out on patrol for 5 years.
5 years? I hope he got paid for all that time.
I'm going to say probably not.
Well, there, you know, if you're going to be a good boss, you should rectify that situation. He was diligent in his job.
Another story of a named set of stairs is the Vanishing Stairs, and that happened right here in the United States. A man who claimed to have worked for the CDC said that in the 1940s, after the Roswell incident, we haven't covered that in the podcast, but trust me, I will. It's just there's a lot.
I was going to say that totally is a Kayla thing.
There's a lot less alien stories out there, and so I try to space them out.
Yep.
Quick thing without giving too much away. The Roswell incident is one of the best known claims of government cover-ups of outer worldly activity. Like Men in Black, that's some Roswell incident shit. Anyway, this man said that after the Roswell incident, there began to be reports of animal mutilations. And so the CDC was sent in. They're thinking that possibly diseases could be involved.
Right.
So they were called in to assist with the investigation, which lasted about 6 months. During those months, various investigators reported a weird wooden-looking staircase that was giving off some kind of communication frequency.
Oh. Okay.
At one point, they stationed their campsite about 100 feet away from the staircase. After they set it up, the next day, the stairs were gone, and there was a burnt spot on the ground where they had been. A couple of days later, the staircase returned, but it was now over 150 feet away. So the crew was like, what the fuck? We have to figure out what's going on here. So they went to examine the stairs. They took some readings. They found out that it was still emitting like a communication frequency, but they did not know where it was trying to communicate to. And when they tried to get a sample of the wood,
yeah,
they couldn't get any of it off because the wood was described as harder than steel. Like they couldn't get any fragments off of it. 6 days later, the stairs vanished again and did not return.
Okay, so it's a staircase, or it's a UFO describe. The heat is getting to my brain. It's a UFO disguising as a staircase.
They we don't were like, know that because they couldn't get a oh. sample.
Right. Well, because it's a UFO.
Madame Sherry's stairs exist in Chesterfield, New Hampshire. They are a set of stairs in the woods that, while not a paranormal-ish mystery, are mm-hmm. they definitely catch your eye. There is a story behind it. During the 1920s, a Parisian music hall singer, Madame Antoinette Sherry, built her castle in the woods of Chesterfield to serve as a summer home. Although it didn't have any major castle-like elements, it was her castle. So it was a rustic French chateau with stunning stone staircase, complete with Roman arches that led to the second floor. Madame Sherry had lavish parties and rumors that scandalous things went on there. They even kind of hinted that maybe Madame Sherry supplemented her income by being a real madam.
Oh, scandalous indeed.
Like maybe she had a brothel in there, but there's no proof of that. However, when Madame Sherry fell into poverty, she abandoned her chateau. And in 1962, the castle burned down. And today, only the stairs and part of the fountain remain. So there's no reports of paranormal happenings with these stairs, but it is weird that they still exist so many years later. And honestly, they kind of look like the remains of the Hotel Hell in Wisconsin that I talked about last episode. It's just very creeptastic.
But at least that one has like an origin.
Yes.
All these other ones, you can't even get to them. They're just in the middle of the woods.
Most of the staircases in the woods are found in national parks. Typically, they rise from the ground with little to no addition or buildings attached. They look like someone just popped them down in the middle of the woods for no reason. That doesn't mean they're ominous or evil. Someone at some point could have just built a structure, abandoned it, and the reasoning for the structure disappeared with time. A couple of different sources pointed out that staircases are typically one of the sturdier items in a home. Because they're meant to handle a lot of traffic, heavy traffic.
Yeah, and the structure is,
obviously, you want them to be supportive because you don't want them to crumble and then you fall. It would be terrible. So, yeah,
especially if you're out in the middle of the woods.
I mean, if my house went down, I wouldn't be surprised if my back door porch steps lasted forever because they seem like one of the sturdiest things in the house.
Wasn't your house a Habitat for Humanity house?
That's not the
it wasn't
reason
built
why.
For you.
I was talking about the sturdiness of my porch, and you had to make it about the unsturdiness of the rest of my house. So basically, the various stages of disrepair can be indicated that there was enough wear and tear for the rest of the building to be gone by now, but the stairs to still last. Almost all of these stories don't have any sources to back up these claims. They're all third-party information regurgitated on a lot of sources. So I went searching for other places other than No Sleep to try to see if I could get anything.
Uh-huh.
I do have to confess that almost all stories were from the No Sleep subreddit, but there were a couple I found elsewhere.
Okay.
One user, Jeep Dave, said, I came across a set in rural West Virginia. I don't think I was quite 40 miles deep, but at least 10 or better. I thought maybe the house had once stood there, but there was no cellar or other debris that would indicate a home was there before. Just a set of stairs with a base that went up maybe one flight, 16 or so steps. And sturdy, could barely shake them. I didn't climb up, though, worried it might break or fall over and I was alone.
That, yep.
Smart.
Smart. Very smart.
Another user named Taylor Ann Shazam said, an hour east of Ironwood, Michigan, there is a clearing in the forest that has stairs. I was hiking and exploring with my cousins, and we stumbled on a clearing about half a football field long. Had a few staircases, but not against trees, just standing in the open. They looked like the stairs from a normal suburban home. Kind of old, though. My older cousin decided to investigate, and he walked to the stairs to see how they were being held up. Couldn't find anything, which weirded him out. So he made us all leave, because he said grass didn't grow near the stairs. Ooh. And that creeped him out.
Yeah.
And another user named Holy Shit Space, who apparently made their account just to post this, said, while visiting my gramps in Lillesand, which is in southern Norway, we went hiking. Nothing big, just a walk and the picnic in some woods. With us were my niece and nephew, who are both quite young, so I joined them in a game of hide and seek while the proper grown-ups had coffee and whatnot. Me and my nephew were first to hide, but we split up, and I ran alone quite a ways into a thicket of woods where I found a staircase. Nothing remarkable, riddled with moss and made from what looked like really old concrete with large pebble rocks in it. It didn't really seem out of place at the time, but thinking back, anyway, I decided it was a fit hiding place. But after a few seconds of squatting behind it, I got up and stepped back. I couldn't shake the feeling that I really shouldn't be anywhere near it. I suddenly had this feeling of being severely unwelcome and that I should get as far away from it as possible. So I went to my family and I didn't look back at it. Thinking about it now, it still gives me the same sort of, I don't know, twisted, wrong feeling.
But that's common with them, isn't it? Like a bad feeling when you get near them.
So do these stairs exist? Absolutely. Are they paranormal? I don't know. I can't find any facts to back it up. And there's no like legit haunting stories. It's all just a feeling. The only thing that I found like the haunting stories on was like the Philippines one where he lost time. And then
that's not
there
really
was
haunting.
The,
that's just paranormal.
And then there was the paranormal element of the Roswell incident one. But even then, there's no facts to back that up. It's just people sharing stories, very urban legend-y. So I'm going to say that I can absolutely tell you that if I stumble upon a set of stairs in the woods, I have no intention of climbing them unless somebody dared me.
But, I will never dare you to do that.
Well, and nobody says I make good choices.
I think they're real. Staircases to nowhere are kind of one of those paranormal things that I like a hill that I will definitely die on. I don't think that there would necessarily be facts because I assume that a lot of people who interact with them, I don't know, either something bad happens to them or they just kind of like let it go and they're like, well, that was weird. And they don't need to go. Every weird thing that happens, I don't go online and like write it out. So, but yeah, there wouldn't be any necessarily be any facts about it because they came from nowhere. Like, that's kind of the point. They have no history. They're just there.
So on your dying hill.
Yep.
On a skeptic scale of para to normal, para being 5, normal being 1.
Yep.
What are you going to give the staircases in the woods?
4.75.
All right, I'm going 1.5 because I don't think. All right. I think it is what it is. If it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck is a duck. And these staircases are ducks.
All right. Well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree on this one.
All right. I'll fight you to the death.
Look, I said it was my dying hill, but I don't actually want to die over the staircases to nowhere. You couldn't do the podcast without me.
You are correct.
I'm the shining joy of your life, other than Sean.
Don't tell my husband.
And Travis.
Don't tell Sam. Don't tell Travis.
And Sam and Lisa.
Rena, Lara.
Rena, yeah. Other than all those people that you mention all the time on the podcast, I am the shining joy of your life.
You are one of them, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I have a story for you, which oddly is also based upon a TikTok.
Nice. TikTok.
TikTok. All right. So last week I told you that I had a two-parter for you. And it was very vague and said that this week's topic was related to last week's topic, but that it wasn't about banshees.
Yeah, I still don't. I'm interested to see how you're going to go about this.
Yes. And I know that you didn't know what I meant by that, but I did tell you that you would like it.
Okay. I believe you.
All right. So I got the inspiration from this, as I said, as a pairing from a person that I follow on TikTok, and her name is Piper. And you can find her at PiperCJ, and she has a master's degree in folklore. Have you come across her yet?
Mm-mm, no, not yet.
Oh, my gosh. So she has many, many videos. She has a master's in folklore. She has videos about the Fae, about mermaids, about vampires, about sirens, folklore, you know? And I came across a video of hers, which I will have Kayla share on our social media, about a certain American cryptid. A very well-known cryptid, one that has been on my list of topic for ages, and how she, Piper, believes that they are actually banshees.
Wait, this is a Mothman episode.
Now, before I talk about this cryptid, and before we try and decide whether or not they are indeed a banshee, I first had to tell you what a banshee was.
Yes.
Which was last week's topic for anyone hopping in right now with this being your very first episode. Go back, listen to about banshees. And then at my end of my story, I'm going to look for two different ratings. First, our normal skeptic scale, paranormal. And then the second one is whether or not you agree with Piper. Because in this TikTok from March, Piper said that she believes that Mothman is a banshee.
Mothman!
Do you have any thoughts of this starting out?
Mothman.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly has reached like Bigfoot level status.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I'm going to believe this theory. I will wait and see what you find and present to me. But
okay.
I would not be surprised if there are several theories out there about what Mothman could probably be, just like there are with Bigfoot.
All right. All right. Well, let's find out. Let me tell you a little bit about Mothman.
I'm in.
All right. So picture it. It is November in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, 1966. Two young couples, Roger and Linda Scarberry and Steve and Mary Mallette, are driving down the road just outside of town near the old power plant when they saw a creature. A creature that they described in the November 16th, 1966 edition of the Point Pleasant Register as being about 6 or 7 feet tall, having a wingspan of 10 feet with red eyes about 2 inches in diameter and 6 inches apart. Steve said, "It was like a man with wings. It wasn't like anything you'd see on TV or in a monster movie." It was sometime around 11:30 to midnight when the couples witnessed the creature on 3 separate occasions standing near the side of the road. They described it as being extremely fast in flight, being able to travel up to 100 miles per hour, though clumsy when it tried to run, which for some reason is just an image that just makes me giggle.
Well, it's like
this big scary Mothman flying all like whoom, well, whoom, there was whoom, and then it tries to run and it's like
there was obviously a lamp somewhere nearby because he loves lamp. Moths love lamps.
Oh.
It makes them fly into things. It's making a moth joke.
No, it's not a good moth joke, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
He doesn't like the light. All right, so Soon, the creature began to follow their car. It hovered above them, apparently gliding, until they reached the National Guard Armory on Route 62. Steve continued, "We went downtown, turned around, and went back, and there it was again. It seemed to be waiting on us." He said that the light gray-like creature then scurried into a field. It had also flown across the top of the car. When they shined a light on it, its eyes glowed red. They also said that it appeared to be afraid of the light, as it tried to get away from it when they did.
Okay.
According to the Point Pleasant Register article, they speculated that the thing was living in the vacant power plant, possibly in one of the huge boilers. "There are pigeons in all of the other buildings," Steve said, "but not in that one." Roger continued, "If I'd seen it, well, by myself, I wouldn't have said anything, but there were four of us, and we all saw it." They said that it didn't resemble a bat in any way, but maybe what you visualize as an angel, though its head didn't seem to be particularly prominent. The last time they saw it was at the gate of the C.C. Lewis farm on Route 62. It flapped its wings and rose straight into the air like a helicopter. The couples reported the sighting to the local sheriff's office, but when the sheriff and deputies responded to the scene, they didn't see any such creature. The one deputy did claim to have seen shadows circling the area and an unexplained static on the police radios. The group did say, though, that they had witnessed a cloud of dust being kicked up from a nearby coal yard, what some might theorize as having been caused by something flying straight up into the air.
Yeah. Like when Superman takes off.
Pew. Yeah, and it just goes
yep,
around him because he's so fast. "This doesn't have an explanation to it," Steve Millett has said. "It was an animal, but nothing like anything I've ever seen before." And Roger Scarsberry went on to say, "I'm a hard guy to scare, but last night I was all for getting out of there." The next day, the couples returned to the scene themselves and found odd-shaped footprints that looked like two horseshoes put together. That same day, the sheriff's office held a press conference about the incident, and the local newswires picked up the story, and the creature was dubbed Mothman, likely in part due to the popularization of the Batman TV show. Although the villain Killer Moth had not yet appeared on the TV show, it was a character known to those who read the comic books.
Yeah, Killer Moth is not my jam, but that would track. That would absolutely track.
Yeah, the Batman show was just starting to get popular, so it was kind of on everyone's brains, and they're like, you know what kind of looks like a big moth? Killer Moth. We'll call this one the Mothman. But the Millettes and the Scarsberries were not the first to spy such a creature. According to allthat'sinteresting.com, 3 days prior, a group of gravediggers in Clendenin, West Virginia, 49 miles southeast of Point Pleasant, also claimed to have spotted something in the sky. Quote, "They glanced up from their work as something huge soared over their heads. It was a massive figure that was moving rapidly from tree to tree." The gravediggers, not just all of them, but just these particular ones, would later describe this figure as a brown human being, unquote.
Turns out there were just, like, monkeys in West Virginia.
Right? Yeah, just hopping from tree to tree. Over the next few days, according to the Gettysburg Times, at least 8 people came forward with reports of a similar creature, including 2 volunteer firefighters, Captain Paul Yoder and Benjamin Onks, who described what they saw as a very large bird with large red eyes.
What? See, and that's what gets me is whenever these things have large red eyes, I'm like, in what world? I mean, obviously, a lot of creatures who, it's albinoism? Like animals that are albino have red eyes.
Right.
But then it wouldn't be described as brown because they are, like, bleached out.
Right. Right. And this bird thing would actually become the official story. Mason County Sheriff George Johnson assured folks that he believed that the sightings were simply due to an unusually large heron. And Dr. Robert Smith, an associate professor of wildlife biology at the West Virginia University, is noted as saying to the Gettysburg Times that the descriptions all fit that of the sandhill crane. the second largest American crane, which stands almost as tall as a man with a wingspan of more than 7 feet.
That's not a bird I want to encounter.
I was literally just going to say that. No thanks to the sandhill crane. Sorry. And that the red eyes that the witness claims to see could simply be the large circles of bare reddish flesh that surround the crane's eyes.
Oh,
obviously.
Okay.
The bird, Dr. Smith said, had apparently wandered out of its normal migration route, and this is why it was causing such a fuss, because it's not, like, native to that region. A local contractor by the name of Newell Partridge also came forward having seen the creature. A resident of Doddridge County, about 100 miles north of Point Pleasant, he claims to have spotted the thing in a meadow just some 90 minutes before the Millettes in Scarsbury saw it out by Point Pleasant's Route 62. He said that his television started to act strangely, get a bit wonky, and then his German Shepherd Bandit started carrying on something terrible. So he shined his flashlight into the field near his home, and he saw something with red eyes shining like bike reflectors. His dog's hair stood on end, and then Bandit, like, ran off chasing after it. And then Bandit never returned, and there was no trace of the creature or the dog in the morning. And then the sightings, for the most part, just seemed to have stopped.
Oh.
Just over a year after the first Mothman sightings, on December 15th, 1967, the Silver Bridge collapsed. Built in 1928 to connect Point Pleasant, West Virginia, to Gallipolis, Ohio?
Lapolis?
Yeah, is that a place in Ohio?
I don't know.
All right, well, the place in Ohio that's on the other side of the Silver Bridge, and on a cold December day, it was completely packed with cars. But this put strain on the structure of the bridge, which had been built for cars that were much lighter, like a little over 2 times lighter when it was originally built in 1928. And then due to the bridge's design, when one part of the bridge began to fail, as it did when a single I-bar near the top of the bridge on the Ohio side cracked, the entire bridge failed. The chain snapped and the bridge fell into pieces, plunging cars and pedestrians into the cold waters of the Ohio River below.
Oofta.
46 people died in the Silver Bridge collapse, either by drowning or by being crushed in the wreckage.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. It didn't take long for the folks of Point Pleasant to connect the sightings of the creature to the collapse of the Silver Bridge, especially after John Keel conflated the connection in his 1975 book, The Mothman Prophecies. He also added some UFO activity as well, for good measure. But Point Pleasant ran with it. They created a Mothman Festival, and according to themothmanfestival.com, it is, quote, an annual event that is held every third weekend in September that commemorates the 1966 Point Pleasant, West Virginia Mothman sightings, which gave birth to the infamous red-eyed winged legend. People from all over the world gather around our charming Main Street to celebrate their favorite cryptid during this one-of-a-kind event, unquote.
They have a Mothman statue with a fucking bubble butt.
Yes. Yes, they do. That should be the picture that you use for the...
The Mothman's thing. Bubble butt?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
People would be so confused.
Yeah.
Until they get to this point in the episode and they'll be like, oh, I get it. I get it. I was really wondering about why that bubble butt was there, but all right.
Bubble butt. Bubble butt.
In 2002, a movie based upon John Keel's book was released. In the film, also called The Mothman Prophecies, Richard Gere plays a reporter whose wife seems to have witnessed the Mothman shortly before her death. He finds himself inexplicably in Point Pleasant several years later with no clue on how he got there. And he's not the only one having trouble explaining himself. As several locals experience premonitions of distant disaster, there's talks of visitations from a mysterious figure called the Mothman. The film, a supernatural horror and mystery, offers no conclusions, communicating instead an eerie feeling of disjointedness that was both panned and praised by critics. Most notably, the film popularized the image of Mothman as a harbinger of doom.
You'd be better off watching Kevin Costner's Dragonfly. That's what I have to say about that movie. And if you know how I feel about Dragonfly, you know that does not high praise.
No, go listen to the podcaster and hear how much Kayla hated that movie. How much we both hated that movie. So that's a synopsis from allthat'sinteresting.com. And it's actually a pretty good summary from what I remember of the movie. It's not great. I also haven't seen it in about a decade, though. But yeah,
that was... It's not great.
No, it's not great. It's not great.
At a Richard Gere phase, it not great.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. Now, were I to leave the story here, I'm guessing that I would not get a very high rating on the Banshee rating scale.
Right.
Because, you know. But I'm not done yet.
Okay.
Okay. So the 1966-67 Point Pleasant, West Virginia sighting is not the only instance of a Mothman-like creature being seen. On April 26, 1986, the Soviet Union experienced the world's largest nuclear disaster when an explosion took place during a routine system test of Reactor 4 at the Chernobyl nuclear plant. In the decades that follows, stories began popping up that in the days before the explosion, residents in the nearby town of, oh gosh, I was definitely going to look up how you pronounce that and I didn't.
Wow, it's a long-ass name for a town.
I think I'm just going to sound it out, y'all. I'm so sorry. Pripyat? We're going to call it Pripyat.
Fuck, I knew how to pronounce that. I think it might be close to Pripyat.
Okay, well.
I once upon a time, because I really loved the Chernobyl. Oh, God, that sounds terrible. I researched a lot into the Chernobyl disaster.
It's really interesting.
It's super interesting.
Super interesting.
But I can't remember how to pronounce it anymore. Sorry. I shouldn't have even interrupted.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Something that sounds close to Pripyat. We're going to go with that, but we know it's probably not right, but it's close.
Mm-hmm.
You get it. Anyway, residents in the nearby town had been seeing a winged creature flying over the town. And according to the Portalist, quote, a few workers at Chernobyl also allegedly saw the same creature hovering above the plant. Even stranger, those who claimed to have seen the creature were reportedly plagued by nightmares and harassed by incessant, threatening phone calls thereafterward, which is weird. Many claimed that the creature resembled a man-like bird with red eyes, and some have come to refer to him as the Black Bird of Chernobyl.
Ooh. I have not run into that in all my... I guess all the stuff I was looking at was more science-y.
Yeah. Yeah, about radiation and all the things that happened afterwards.
Yep.
Other alleged sightings occurred in New York City on September 6th, 2001, Ooh. 5 days prior to the attacks on the World Trade Center. Witnesses reported seeing a large crane-like figure in the vicinity of the towers, and on the day of, some claimed to have seen his face through the clouds of smoke and debris.
Oof.
And then bringing it home, and how Mothman came to be on my list of topics like so many moons ago, the Minnesota Mothman sighting. Do you know about this one?
I do not.
On August 1st, 2007, during rush hour, an I-35 bridge in Minneapolis collapsed. It had given way at the center, plunging 111 vehicles into the Mississippi River, during which 13 people died and 145 others were injured. And like in the instance of the Silver Bridge collapse, prior to the Interstate 35 bridge collapse, there had been reported sightings of a Mothman-like creature appearing near the bridge. And while skeptics dismiss these reports as, once again, sightings of large birds such as cranes, it solidifies in the minds of many Mothman believers that he is, not unlike a banshee, a warning of impending doom and death.
Oof. I'm following the connection, and while I am not 100% convinced, I mean, that's more spread out than I was expecting.
Right? So that is Mothman. And I agree with Piper. I do believe that Mothman is a banshee. Or a banshee-like thing. Because I believe in banshees, even though you gave them, I believe, a 3.
Here's my rating.
Okay.
Is Mothman real?
Mm-hmm.
4.
Oh, okay.
Is Mothman a moth? Nernass. Like, Mothman is not a moth or a moth creature. Like, I'm sorry. Right. No fucking moth is going to shy away from the light. Moths love lamp. Okay?
Okay, that...
I just added that in. I added that.
Okay, I was like, that wasn't the second one, but okay. I also agree. Mothman being a moth, Nernass.
Okay.
He's not a moth.
Is Mothman a banshee? Based on what you talked about with banshees last week and mm-hmm. the information you gave me, I'm actually mm-hmm. leaning, I think I'm going to do 4 again. Like 4 right? and 4. Because... What always bugged me about Mothman and why
bugged
I had kind of got into it with a preconceived notion that uh-huh. I was going to say no was that there are really no other reports of Mothman outside of that area in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that, like, series of time. Right? That
right.
small series of time. And I was like, oh, so what? Mothman just has, like, the life expectancy of a moth? And then he's dead and there's nothing. I didn't know about all these other reports.
Right.
But it makes way more sense that it would be something like a banshee that would be sort of an omen and can appear all over without actually having to travel anywhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yes, that tracks. I'm bought in. 4 and 4.
All right. Yes. Yes.
Not
I
quite
win.
5 by 5, but 4 and 4.
Ugh, no one wants to be 5 by 5. Kayla.
I like Faith. Fuck off. I love you.
I love you too. I don't really dislike her as much. She does make me a little bit mad because she makes some very poor decisions, but I understand that she is just working through her own personal trauma and she was not given the same life situations as Buffy was. And Buffy turned out well because of the situations that she was brought up in.
What are your ratings?
I think in regards to Mothman being real, I'm going to give it a 4.75. And in regards to being a banshee, I'm going to give it a 5. Like,
oh, wow.
If Mothman's real, I do believe that they are a banshee or a banshee-like creature. They definitely show up before tragedy. And I don't think that they are the bringer of tragedy. I think that they show up and they're like, hey, shit's about to go down. Be careful.
Minimal skepticism, high believer rating in this episode.
Yeah.
I kind of love it. I get worried sometimes when we go on, like, severely skeptic, mm-hmm. like, sections, which there was a while where I wasn't telling stories because I didn't believe them, and then it turned into a whole thing. But the whole point of having the skeptic scale is so that we can tell stories that we believe in and don't, but we still get to tell the stories because it's fun.
Right.
But it is always nice to have a couple of things where we're like, yeah.
Okay, I have another question for you, though. Does my Mothman story change your rating of the Banshee? Because if you believe in the Mothman and you believe that Mothman is a Banshee,
yeah,
then does that not mean that you believe in Banshees?
I'll pop it back up to a 4. It's like when you get additional resources that you can change your opinion when you learn new information. So yes, I will give that to you.
That's learning and growing.
We love learning. We love growing.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I have a not listener request, a listener suggestion.
Okay.
Okay. So somebody just recently listened to the Septabus episode.
Oh, yep.
And I did not ask for their permission to mention their name, so I'm just not going to do it. So they listened to the Septabus episode, and we were talking about it. And then I mentioned about having done the episode on Lil Bastard, James Dean's car.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, you like haunted cars. And I was like, fuck yeah, because I like cars and
that's
like hauntings.
Jam.
And so they asked me if I had ever heard about the ghost car in England.
Oh.
Have you heard
I've never
about
heard
the ghost
of the ghost car
in
England.
England.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so I looked it up. This is a shorter story. It's not something we'd be able to throw in for a full half of an episode. So I figured I'd wrap it up. Since it was kind of a listener request anyway, I would wrap it up with the end of this one.
No, I love that. Let's do it.
Okay, so this is the ghost car and the A3 car crash in Surrey, England. So to start it out, Surrey is a county in England, relatively close to London, about 20 miles away. The mm-hmm. A3, which is also known as Portsmouth Road or London Road in different sections, is a major road connecting the City of London and Portsmouth, and it runs a length of 108 kilometers, about 67 miles for us.
Thank you for the translation, because I was like, kilometers.
So basically, though, I mean, England is a much smaller country. So if you think about it, I kind of, in my brain, connect it to, like, I-35. Like, it runs the length.
Yeah, I do believe that England is about as long as Minnesota.
Yep, that's what I'm saying. It's like I-35.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a big connector. A Vauxhall Astra is a small, compact car. It is a brand and model in the United Kingdom, only in the United Kingdom. We do not have Astras in the United States. And Kayla, a.k.a. me, is sure to incorrectly pronounce a few of these city names in this story. So that's the background you needed for it before I read this off.
Yeah, welcome to Left of Skeptic, where we can't say anything properly.
Yep. On a December 11th, Sunday night, in 2002, a member of the public reported seeing a car lose control and leave the A3 around 100 meters before the emergency slip road at Burpham near Guildford. Some sources said that the police received several of these reports from the public. So, on a Saturday night, somebody saw a car lose control and go off the road.
Not good, but not unheard of.
Police arrived after getting these reports and searched for the car and driver, but found no crashed car, no wreckage, no debris, no evidence of a recent crash. The underbrush was high and thick. It did not appear to be disturbed at all, and they just didn't find anything until they looked a little bit deeper, and what they did eventually find was a little bit more disturbing.
Oh.
Deep in the underbrush, a maroon Vauxhall Astra was there, nose down, windshield spiderwebbed, driver's door smashed in, and not far from the car itself was the skeleton of the driver.
So he just repeated his accident over and over again until someone found him?
This was not the result of a car crash from the night before. It wasn't even close to recent. In fact, it had laid undiscovered for 5 months. Confirmed by the additional discovery of the decomposed body nearby that had been sitting there since July, and it was now December.
Ugh.
The driver was a 21-year-old male named Mr. Christopher Chandler from Middlesex, who had been on the run from Metropolitan Police since July 16th, according to one source. Apparently, he was wanted for robbery.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chandler was last seen alive in Hounslow of West London, drinking with friends. No one had known that he had driven off towards Surrey, and his brother had, in fact, reported him missing, but the police had no idea where he ended up, so it was just one of those missing cases that just went off to the wayside.
Right.
His body was found outside the car, and police speculate that he had suffered severe injuries and had crawled out of the passenger side of the car before dying in his attempt to escape the vehicle and trying to get up the steep embankment back to the road.
That's so sad.
His cell phone records show a final call to his brother lasting for less than a second, probably not even long enough to fully connect. So hysteria greeted these findings, as it was suggested mm-hmm. in the national press that the sighting of the car leaving the road the night before could only have been a ghostly replay of the fatal crash earlier in the year.
Right.
This view was not shared by the Surrey police. A spokeswoman insisted that the incident had only ever been treated as regular road traffic collision and the car was obscured by leaves and branches, which probably prevented it from being reported earlier. Even if motorists had spotted the vehicle, she added, they might have assumed it was already being dealt with. So the spokesperson said, we believe the car left the road and ended up in the ditch surrounded by trees and undergrowth during July. So, like, they're not denying the timeline.
Right.
They said it doesn't appear any other vehicles were involved. It was in the summer months and the car was covered by trees and undergrowth. Although it was only 20 yards from the road, it could not be seen and there were no footpaths close to the spot. The car had obviously been there for a long time and thousands of motorists had passed by that spot every day. Although the car was not clearly visible, it is possible people may have seen it and not thought to report it. So they were getting at just focusing on the actual crash and just kind of dismissing the ghost.
Yeah, they just left out the part of how they found it.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, that's great. We understand all of that. Well, let's talk about the fact that people saw the car crash. That's why they called you. That's why you found that actual accident.
Yep. So, giving into a little bit, Sergeant Rush Greenhouse of the Surrey Police added, the car was discovered as a result of a report from members of the public who thought they saw the car's headlights veering off the road. The officers could not identify that collision, but they had the presence of mind to search on foot and found this car. The Telegraph gave the following report on the inquest into the crash in an article by Stuart Payne entitled Skeleton Found 5 Months After the Crash. And they do not mention the ghost. They say the skeleton was a motorist found by his crashed car. One man who will never forget the day in a hurry is Stephen Casey, an employee at McAllister's Recovery, who worked for Macro Recovery Services at the time, so a tow truck.
Mm-hmm.
He attended the crash scene the following day to tow the car away and remembers the skeleton being recovered at the time. The car was badly damaged, said Steve, who was in his 40s. It was written off and rusty and was an old car. Someone said afterwards that there might have been a ghost involved, but you aren't told that at the time. I was just there getting on with my job.
Mm-hmm.
Although he now makes light of the incident a decade on, Steve admitted that he was a bit worried by the presence of a skeleton during the removal of the car, and he said that he still remembered what he saw when he drives down the A3 past Burpham, and I think about it every time. So, it's a kind of ghost car. Either way, yeah. It's a tragedy. Every news article I found mentions the headlights veering off the road that leads to the finding. There's been no reports of that since. So several people saw this, but there were no reports of it since. So I hope that it was just a repeat of the car crash and that now the ghost has been able to find peace.
I mean, yeah, one would hope so, especially if there haven't been any sightings since.
So thank you for that suggestion.
That's really interesting.
To look into. That was pretty cool. A different take on a ghostly vehicle, for sure. If you have a story you would like to tell us about your own haunting experience, or if you have suggestions for us of a place you'd like us to cover, anything like that, you can do so by emailing us directly, leftofskeptic@gmail.com. Or you can go to our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, and click the Listener Stories tab on the top of the page, or click the link tree in our bio. You can choose to give us your name or remain anonymous, whichever you'd prefer. We just ask that you please include your pronouns so we can make sure that we say your correct gender.
You can also follow us on social media. We are on TikTok. Not just looking at videos, but sometimes Kayla makes them. Instagram and Twitter at Left of Skeptic and Facebook at Left of Skeptic Podcast.
All right. I got to go rest this voice because I am sounding haggard today.
Haggard indeed. Just kidding. You don't sound that bad. I'm going to go take a cold shower because I am so sweaty.
That sounds beautiful. Thank you all for listening. We love you very much.
Happy Spooky Wednesday.
Happy Spooky Wednesday. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Evie found a very large bug.
The Left of Skeptic podcast is written and hosted by Kayla Moria and Brittany Lind. This week's episode is edited by me, Brittany Lind. The Left of Skeptic music is by Dave Melling and Emily Havoc, and our artwork is by Al LeBlanc. Okay, bye!